in my homily, how about we welcome back Father Jude from his vacation? It's wonderful to have you back, Father. So in the year C, in these readings, we're reading from the Gospel of Luke. In this section of Luke, as Jesus making his way to Jerusalem, and we kind of know what happens to him in Jerusalem, right? He ends up being tortured and crucified. So this journey for Jesus as he's going on is one that doesn't really have a pleasant ending. And readings the last couple of weeks, the scholars think put him about halfway in his journey. I don't know about you, but when I take a journey, when I get halfway there, something kind of in my mind changes. Now, usually I have a happy destination, so I start to get excited, right? Half the journey is behind me, and I'm looking forward to what awaits me at the other end. I start to get, my whole mood lifts. But for Jesus, it may not be that way. So for me, it's no surprise the last couple of weeks, the readings have seemed kind of harsh, haven't they? I mean, last week we read about the servants being beaten if they weren't ready for their master. And this week we read how Jesus is saying how hard it is to get into heaven. And in doing so, he uses two examples, with the third being the goal, which is the feast. And so he starts out with the narrow gate. I don't know about anybody else, but this talk of the narrow gate has me a little nervous. I don't really like that image myself, but anyway. So in ancient Palestine, the walled cities would have had two kinds of gates, broad and narrow. So the broad gates would have been for the masses of people, for the merchants, for people buying their wares, for the craftsmen, for the shepherds. The big gates that opened up and let all the people in. But there are also side gates in the walls, and these were called the narrow gates. These were reserved for dignitaries and important people in the town. And so when Jesus is giving this example of the narrow gate, not only is he giving a visual of like how hard it is, but he's also exhorting his followers to strive to enter through the narrow gate, so also to strive to rise above the masses, that they should be pointing their sights much higher than just being with everybody else, that they should be pointing their sights towards being able to enter through the narrow gate. He also goes on to say this is pretty hard to do, right? He says only a few will make it. So I think it's kind of easy for us to throw up our hands and say, well, if it's that hard, why even try? But I think there's a different way of looking at it also. So I just finished my last class for my master's program. Now, I do have that pesky little thing called a thesis to write, so I'll be busy. But this last class was to prepare us for submitting our proposal for our thesis. And part of that was having a bibliography of like sources that we were going to use to write the paper. And I had over 30. So if you need to find me in the next few months, I'll be in the Deacon Cave, all right? The director of the program kind of cautioned all of us. He says, as you do your research, you're going to find articles and books that are so interesting, and you're only going to keep reading them. And he says, don't. He says, you need to remain really focused on your paper. You need to ask yourself, with everything that you read, does this pertain to your paper? He said, tape it on the mirror, get it on a t-shirt, tattoo it on your arm, whatever you have to do, does this pertain to my paper? And if it doesn't, you have to skip it and come back later. But I think if we use that same mentality when we think about entering through the narrow gate, it helps us. Because in what we do, the programs that we watch, the things that we read, the people that we hang out with, do they help point us to the narrow gate? And if we keep repeating that to ourselves over time, I think that our actions, our habits, become things that do point us towards the narrow gate. So instead of looking at it like this impossible thing to do, if we take these little steps along the way, the impossible becomes possible. The second image he uses is the locked door. When I'm out with a group of people and we're going into a store or a restaurant, if I'm the first one at the door, one of my favorite tricks is instead of pulling the door open, I kind of push it up against the door jamb and rattle it like it's locked, just to see the expression in everybody's faces. It takes a couple of seconds for them to realize I'm joking. But in the gospel, we hear what it's like when it's not a joke, that these people are coming up to this locked door and they're pleading. We know you. You were with us. You taught us. We ate and drank with you. You've got to let us in. And yet the door is locked. For me, this is one of the hardest things in the gospel to read out of any of them, is it's just not enough to know Jesus. Especially the part about eating and drinking just really points me to this table saying, coming to Mass is not enough. We need to move beyond that in our relationship with God, in our relationship with Jesus, in our relationship with others. We need to move deeper. We need to do the things, again, that point us towards a narrow gate. Because Jesus uses this final image of the feast to tell us that we want to get in. We don't want to have the door locked. Because the image he uses of reclining at table, right? And for me, reclining at table sounds something like a beautiful day like today, sitting around the backyard with my family and my friends, plenty of food, plenty of drink, sitting around just talking, just shooting the breeze all afternoon with not a care. That sounds kind of nice to me, and I want that. I want that in the kingdom of heaven for me, and I want it for you as well. And so we help each other on that way. We help each other get through that narrow gate. We help each other avoid the locked door. And it's not impossible. Others have gone before us that are there. Today, August 25th, is the feast, or excuse me, the memorial of St. Louis. And Louis was the king of France in the 13th century. He had 11 kids. He was a family man. And in today's office of readings, he writes a letter to his son who's about ready to take over his throne. And I'm going to share just a few passages out of this because I think there are some things in here that we can walk away with to help, that will help us get through that narrow gate. So he starts out by saying, "My dearest son, my first instruction is that you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your strength. Without this, there is no salvation. Keep yourself, my son, from everything that you know displeases God, that is to say, from every mortal sin. If the Lord has permitted you to have some trial, bear it willingly and with gratitude, considering that it happened for your good and that perhaps you well deserve it. If the Lord bestows upon you any kindness or prosperity, thank him humbly and see that you become no worse for it, either through vain pride or anything else, because you ought not to oppose God or offend him in the matter of gifts. Be kind-hearted to the poor, the unfortunate, and the afflicted. Give them as much help and consolation as you can. Thank God for all the benefits he has bestowed upon you, that you may be worthy to receive even greater. Be just to your subject, swaying neither to the right nor to the left, but holding the line of justice. Always side with the poor rather than the rich until you are certain of the truth." Some really great stuff there, isn't there? So the way for us is hard, but it's not impossible. All we need to do is strive to enter through the narrow gate. Avoid that locked door. Jesus has gone before us. Our place at his table is reserved. All we need to do is claim it.